From Texas Public Radio, this is Texas Matters, a weekly radio news magazine that looks at the issues, events, and people in the Lone Star State. Today on Texas Matters, the Lavernia hazing sexual assault scandal, how Lavernia ISD is dealing with the allegations. A federal lawsuit claims the sexual assaults happened for years and were widespread, and we hear from an expert on hazing. She says Lavernia is not an exception. Hazing is getting worse across the nation. This is Texas Matters from Texas Public Radio. I'm David Martin Davies. It was in late March that Wilson County Sheriff deputies showed up at the Lavernia High School and began making arrests. For weeks, the community 30 miles southeast of San Antonio had seen rumors on social media that hazing rituals with the high school male sports teams had gone too far. That same day, the school district's superintendent, Jose Moreno, posted a public statement on Facebook that read, "A complaint was filed in reference to high school boys' athletics. The district is aware of the complaint and is fully cooperating with the authorities as they conduct a thorough investigation." The community's comments responding to that Facebook post were a mix of shock, outrage, and blame. And in local news reports, there was the ominous tagline, "More arrests are expected." 13 student athletes have been arrested to date. In Texas, 17 is the age for adult criminality, so many are being charged with adult criminal assault. After complaints were raised about conflicts of interest, the Texas Rangers took over the criminal investigation, and the Attorney General's office took over the prosecution. The Texas Education Agency also received a complaint from the community and has launched its own investigation to see if school officials should lose their teaching and coaching certifications. In April, the first of what is expected to be a dozen federal lawsuits was filed, claiming that there was a long and sordid history of neglect, misconduct, and abuse involving dozens of children over a decade or more, where the students on the football team forcefully sodomized other members of the team using objects. Since the day of the initial arrest, Lavernia ISD has been in damage control, and until recently, it has had little to say to the community directly about the allegations. On Monday, May 1st, at the Lavernia ISD board meeting, Superintendent Moreno read a statement.
"I want to provide an update and clarification on the progress of the sexual assault allegations against high school male student athletes. As a school district, we understand the sensitive nature of this investigation and will fully cooperate with the Texas Rangers to ensure a thorough investigation is conducted. There is no definitive timeline for the completion at this point. As was previously reported, the district was restricted from proceeding with its internal investigation by law enforcement due to concerns that might impede the criminal investigation. However, at this time, the district has notified the Texas Rangers of its intent to proceed with the internal investigation. At all times, know that we are deeply committed to protecting the safety and well-being of our students and will not tolerate any behavior that puts them at risk of harm. In the recent weeks, we have implemented several initiatives to create a sense of normalcy. We have been mindful of our students' emotional needs. The following steps have been taken. Communication and staff accessibility has been at the center of our decision making. By the end of the week, we will launch a new method to report bullying, harassment, acts of violence, and other unsafe behaviors called Listen to My Voice. In coordination with the Lavernia Police Department, we now have a Lavernia police officer assigned to the high school full-time. High school counselors provided guidance lessons to high school students outlining the services available to them and communication procedures. I realize that the allegations have impacted our entire community. Our hearts go out to our students and our families, as well as our teachers and our administrators. I ask that we continue to reach out and support one another. Let's hold strong to our Lavernia family values and not allow for news headlines, social media, or gossip to negatively influence who we are. Instead, let's use our strengths to ensure the success of our students and who they will become."
Also at that recent Lavernia ISD board meeting, there was an opportunity for citizens to be heard. One local parent, Stephen McNeil, stepped up to the podium's microphone.
Okay, I have children finishing fourth and sixth grade here at LVISD. And we're having conversations about sexual assault long before we expected to. We've had to have them now because the LVISD board and the administration has failed us. Our children are hearing about it from other kids at school, social media, and from the TV news. Time and again, the school board, Mr. Moreno, have had the opportunity to inform the public of what is happening. On March 23rd and on the 24th, Mr. Moreno sent a message via email with the attachment entitled HS Athletics Letter, and it stated that a complaint was filed. The title of the attachment was deceiving, and the body of the letter said nothing, really. The same attachment, or attachment title, HS Athletics, and the body of the memo was longer, but again, it's a flowery memo that didn't really address the problem. The only hint was, it said, the travesty of the events occurring at the Lavernia High School, but nothing about what the event was. The district is under strict guidelines and is not able to comment on the complaint or unable to release much information because of the ongoing investigation, and I feel that's a cop-out. I understand that there may be some items that cannot be commented on, but there are lots that could have been and can still be commented on. And if you want parents not to post negative comments on various
social media, you've got 1 minute.
Okay. On various social media, it's been hurtful to students, staff, and community leaders get in front of this situation and keep the parents and the community informed, or the post will happen in the vacuum of nothing from ISD. The board and administration has done little to acknowledge or address the issue. For over a month, you cannot even bring yourselves to say the words alleged sexual assault. To the victims, this says that you do not believe the accusations and are just protecting the perpetrators, the ISD administration, and the board.
This is Texas Matters from Texas Public Radio. I'm David Martin Davies. We're taking a deep dive into the Lavernia ISD sexual assault hazing scandal. Here's what we know. There were 13 arrests of male student athletes from Lavernia High School in connection with the case. The allegations in the criminal complaint go back to 2014. In April, a federal lawsuit was filed by an unnamed minor who attended Lavernia High School. The factual allegations of the lawsuit, which are thus far unproven, are graphic and disturbing. It spells out repeated sexual abuse by the team and coaches who could have stopped it but did not. The student claims the first attack came after he was promoted to the varsity team, and it happened while in a locker room. Afterwards, word of the attack spread around the high school. After a coach learned of that attack, the players were warned in a team meeting to end the hazing. According to the suit, the coach said, quote, "You won't be able to get a job, no girl will date you, and you could go to prison." But the attacks did not stop. They grew in frequency, in brutality, and in disturbing nature. Attorney J.K. Ivey represents the victim, Child Doe, and he says more cases, possibly a dozen, are coming. I spoke to Ivy about this first case.
What we have here is a period of absolutely no restraint, no enforcement of state law, school board educational rules, school board employment rules for preventing and reporting sexual assaults on campus. That is tantamount to a pattern of conscious indifference or neglect of the civil rights of the student athletes on campus, and as such, federal law 42 U.S.C. 1983 and Title IX provide for a civil remedy for those adversely affected. So the families I represent are seeking two things. One, a court order monitoring and establishing good policies at Lavernia Independent School District, and secondly, monetary damages for what they've been put through as a result of the school's misconduct and failure to act when appropriate.
How do you characterize what happened? It's very graphic in the facts of the case that you have in your lawsuit.
Well, the conduct is unspeakable. My personal belief is that this is something that evolved and developed over time, and that the school had plenty of knowledge, of forethought, and opportunity to do something and failed to do it. And so is what often happens in a scandal as things continue to escalate and get worse year in, year out. until the point that we have children bent over benches in the locker rooms having unspeakable things done to them. The truth of the matter is that varsity football program rolled over in its entirety every 2 years with an entirely new set of students. So we can't say this was just an isolated event involving a small group of boys that did something wrong. What we have is an entire culture in the athletic department and program that permitted this to go on season after season, by some accounts for more than a decade, until it finally got to the point that the story broke. Now all of a sudden everyone's wringing their hands and saying, oh my goodness, but where were those people when this first happened? And we know that the coaches had specific notice of at least one rape of Child Doe, yet failed to do anything more than call the boys together and say, hey, don't do that, you could go to jail. Nothing. No report to the school district, no report made to the authorities. They violated state law, that's a state jail felony. They violated the employee handbook of Laverne Independent School District. But more importantly, they sent a signal to the boys, wink, 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 you know, we're not going to do anything about it. And Child Doe was raped five more times after that in locker room meeting with the coaches. Inexcusable.
So you think the coach was actually saying, don't let us catch you doing this?
I have anecdotal evidence, a statement of witnesses that indicate coaches walking in, seeing things, turning around and walking out and just saying something to the effect of, hey, knock that off.
So you have one lawsuit right now, and are you getting ready to file more?
I have at least a half dozen that we're actively preparing to file, and I'm aware of, you know, close to that same number. I've spoken to a number of attorneys around the area that also have clients, and I believe that as more families have the bravery to stand up and say, no, this is wrong, and we're not going to let this happen to our children, the more likely the school district will be forced to confront their role and involvement in it.
Laverne ISD Superintendent Jose Moreno said in that press conference on Monday that he did not learn of any of this until mid-February when there was the investigation began. And so
he did say that. So I'm not prepared to say that he wasn't truthful, but I am prepared to say that where there's smoke, there's usually fire.
Since this scandal has come to light in Lavernia, can you comment about how the school district has responded and whether or not they have been fostering an open, nurturing environment where they're trying to provide help to students who may be victimized, or have they tried to put a culture of intimidation and retaliation against the people who have stepped forward?
The school district has not itself provided any remedial measures or response in support of the victims. However, the authorities and county services have. In terms of on a personal level, I do know that the intimidation and victimization in the form of peer pressure and pressures to recant or change the stories or not bring charges continues unabated, and our next step is going to be seeking injunctive relief in court to prohibit coaches and other school employees from applying any sort of coercive pressure on these children. And certainly we would hope that the school district would do everything within its power to eliminate peer pressure and peer bullying, particularly as it relates to these criminal offenses.
J.K. Ivey is an attorney representing an unnamed student from Laverne ISD who is suing the school district and select employees over a number of sexual assaults that happened during hazing. What is it about hazing? Why do people do it? It happens in the military, in street gangs, college fraternities, sororities, bands, choirs, and even in the professional workplace. Hazing has been around since people started forming groups, so with its long history, you might think we'd have a better understanding of its motives, its importance to group behavior, and possibly how to stop it, but we don't. Hazing and bullying have a lot in common. There's power and abuse at the core, but hazing is abuse that masks itself as somehow as a good for the social group, and in that way, hazing could be even more dangerous than bullying. Dr. Susan Lipkins is a psychologist who has studied hazing and is the author of the book Preventing Hazing.
I define hazing as a process used by groups to maintain the status quo or to discipline. And they use traditions, and that is how hazing continues. They're repeating a rite of passage or a tradition year after year. With each passing year, they want to add their own mark. And so with adding their own mark, they increase the frequency of the pain and the humiliation. And by doing that, within 10 years, you have a hazing which is much worse than it was a decade earlier.
Is there a trend that we're seeing hazing becoming more graphically sexual in nature?
Yes, I believe that the we have seen over the last 10 or 15 years that hazing is becoming more violent and more sexualized each year. And I've seen it move into the high schools, typically sports teams, and it's becoming worse and worse every year.
How widespread is hazing?
Well, it's really hard to tell because actually, there's no organization that tracks hazing. We have no CDC. We don't have anything federal or on the state level that actually you could report a hazing to. So what happens is it's just independent people like me who look at the hazings. I know that it's increasing every year, and it's I know by the fact that I'm an expert witness in hazing cases, and I can see that there are more and more cases every year. When I started in 2006, there were like 50 hits on Google. 2003, there were 50 hits on Google, and now there are more than 6 million hits on Google. And it just shows you that the hazing is basically has always been there. The code of silence is being broken, and we're getting to hear more and more about the hazing. The hazing cases that we hear about are typically the ones that send people to the hospital or to the morgue.
So that's when hazing obviously has gone too far. But is there a safe level of hazing where people can just say we're just having harmless fun?
There is no such thing as a safe level of hazing because there's nobody in control. So like we see sports teams, the pro teams, they often start in the spring with the cross-dressing, you know, the baseball teams, they dress up as girls or Halloween costumes. But that's not the end of hazing. That's the beginning of hazing. Hazing has a mild, a moderate, and a severe level. And we never know when it's going to trend into the moderate or into the severe, into the highly sexualized or highly violent or, you know, even hazing that creates or causes death.
What is it about hazing? What is happening inside that group dynamic?
The psychology of hazing is something that I call easiest to be explained by the blueprint of hazing. So all you want to do is do the sport or play the instrument in the group that you've always wanted to do your whole life. You can't wait till you get onto the football team in high school. And you finally make it. The coach says you're good enough. And then the team says, in order to really be part of us, to prove that you're good enough to be part of us, you have to pass through these traditions. And the traditions are hazing. So you get hazed. You're the victim. You're hazed. The next year, you watch as the next group come in, and you're a bystander watching as others get hazed. Eventually, you have senior status, and you feel like it is your duty and your right to do unto others what was done to you. So you repeat the tradition, and you think you're doing the right thing by repeating the tradition. But as I said, each year, you're going to add your own mark. So now what you do is a little bit worse than what was done to you. And so then the kids graduate from high school, they throw that blueprint into their backpack, and they take it with them to college, to the workplace, and to the military. And I think that most kids are more ready and willing to haze and be hazed when they get into college than they are ready to write a term paper.
So what allegedly happened in Lavernia, this isn't the first time, it's not the only time, this has happened across the country before.
Right. I actually started in 2003 because in a community close to where I work, there were kids who came home from a preseason football camp, and they were sodomized with broomsticks, pine cones, and golf balls covered in icy hot. And so for 5 days, they were brutally sodomized and hurt and beaten, and nobody reported it. 3 weeks later, one of the kids showed up in an emergency room and gave a cover story, which is also very common. The cover story did not match the problems that that person was having, and the doctors uncovered the case, and it broke. And I decided to start doing some investigation because I could not understand why kids would do this to other kids they know. These are people they grew up with in the same small community. And from that point, I have tracked and been involved with more and more sexualized cases. And, you know, it's now spreading into female athletes as well. But the sodomy cases, you know, in the last 10 years are just skyrocketing. What makes this case a little bit different is the amount of kids that they are finding who were involved, the degree of pain and suffering that they have inflicted, the length of time that it has been going on. A lot of this information is usually not able to be mined as well as this, it seems like this case is. So it's horrible and horrific to the community. And what's happening is something I call the second hazing, which is that typically 80% of the community will support the status quo. The perpetrators, the coach, say, this has been going on. It happened to me. It'll happen to you. It's no big deal. You're a wimp because you reported it. And then 10 to 20% will support the victim and say, oh, we have to do justice. This isn't right. I don't want my son to be sodomized in order to play a sport. You have this rift in the community where people were friends or sometimes even relatives, and they hate each other. And it takes years to heal. It's very difficult to heal the community. But truthfully, if you stand back, you'll see that this has to change. You don't really want your children to be sexually brutally hurt in order to play a sport or a musical instrument or anything else on a team. So we really have to look at our culture and case by case, community by community, really understand that we have to stop this kind of behavior, not just let it go underground, not just blame a handful of kids and say in 4 years it won't happen again, because somehow that culture continues. It's not just the coach's fault. It's not just the perpetrator's fault. This probably happened to them and probably to many, many, many people for years before.
In my talking with the community, with members of the community in Lavernia, about what allegedly happened with this team there, there isn't a lot of real understanding about hazing and why this happened. I mean, is that normal?
Yes, of course it's normal. You know, most people don't understand hazing, and most people diminish it, and they make it seem as if it's not important, and that you should have taken it. It's not a big deal. And truthfully, I think more people have been hazed. They pass it on, and they don't really think about it again until something traumatic happens in their life, or until their child is hazed, or something else wakes them up. And then when I meet those people, it's like they re-experience the feeling of being hazed all over again. They blush. They get upset. They can't believe that they put themselves in that situation to be abused, or in the situation to abuse somebody else. But that happens like 20 years later when they're, you know, more seriously adults. People who have never been hazed don't understand the peer pressure. They say, why didn't you just walk away? Well, all the victims of hazing tell me that if they try to walk away, the hazing would be much worse. And all the perpetrators agree. You're a ninth grader and you're small, and the 12th graders on a football team are much larger than you, and you have 5 or 10 of them surrounding you and pinning you down. You don't have a choice. And I think people really need to understand that. You don't have a choice to walk away. Even on college campuses, fraternities and sororities say, oh, you can leave whenever you want. It's not true, because what happens is you become a dead pledge, and you're ostracized so that you're socially unable to function. And I don't know one person who's broken the code of silence and seriously been hazed who can actually stay on that same college campus. So between the social isolation, which many of the victims may be feeling now, along with the physical abuse, there's no exit. And people really need to consider that when they're saying, oh, you should have walked away, or it's your fault, or why did you join the group? Anyhow.
Some people think that when you have hazing, that it builds stronger team cohesion, that you're going to get a stronger football team out of hazing rituals, and that when you have a small town in Texas where the football team's success is very important, then that has value.
It does. But what often happens is that the freshmen will bond together because they've all been hazed together, but they're not bonding with the seniors. And what the kids tell me is, you know, I thought those people who are called my brothers and this is a family had my back. And suddenly they're attacking me. Yes, they have my back. They're attacking me from behind, physically and sexually. So, you know, they don't really feel like they can trust them. So the very thing that you actually want to build on a team, which is trust, that I will be there for you to protect you, to defend you, to throw the ball to you, and you'll catch it, is being broken by being physically attacked.
So how can people do things in a hazing ritual that they normally wouldn't do outside of it?
That's a great question. So what I think happens is that moral kids, people who have good judgment, honor students, all kinds of great kids, walk into a room and pretend that over the doorway it says hazing. They drop their backpack that has inside of it their moral judgment, their ability to think straight, and they go into basically a land where there's a code of silence, meaning nobody will suffer consequences for anything that happens here. So it's like a free-for-all. And they no longer are able to use the judgment that they would be using outside of that situation. If you ask them outside of the situation, would you want your little brother to be hazed like this or sodomized or your sister to be hurt like that, they would punch you in the face. But when it comes into the hazing, this is all acceptable and all rules are off. Any rational thinking seems to just leave the entire neighborhood, the entire area.
So you've seen multiple hazing cases across the country. What typically happens? Do the hazing perpetrators face the full extent of prosecution in the law, or do they typically plead down, settle out of court in civil cases, and then this just kind of goes away?
There's one thing I was just thinking about that's kind of interesting, and that is, will they be registered as sexual offenders? And in truth, I don't think the intent is the same as a sexual offender. I don't think that they're getting sexual pleasure in the same way that a sexual offender that we know of would normally do it. I think they're really doing it as a repetition of what was done to them. Now, are there homophobic, you know, are there some kinds of, you know, other psychological issues at play? Probably. But it's not really the same as a sexual offender. So if they were carrying that status, you know, that would be new. I haven't heard that they have had to be prosecuted in that area. Typically, they plead down. Typically, the cases, the severity is diminished. They end up often doing community service. The jail time is very infrequent. I think it was in the case of the drum major at FAMU, I think his name was Champion. There were a few people who actually did go to jail, but he died. Short of that, the sentences are relatively short, and on the civil cases, they're typically settled. They don't go to trial, and the cycle continues.
Dr. Susan Lipkins is a psychologist who for over 20 years has studied hazing. She has authored the book Preventing Hazing. That's it for this edition of Texas Matters. Thanks for listening. I'm David Martin Davies. You can write to us with an email to texasmatters@tpr.org. You could also write directly on our show page on our website at tpr.org. That's where you can find past Texas Matters programs, and you can find us on iTunes. And tune in again next week for another edition of Texas Matters from Texas Public Radio.